We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Glad you could join us. While summer is usually the time for Hollywood blockbusters, that doesn't mean there aren't other good films to be seen during the hot months. Plenty of alternatives are available for the non-teenage filmgoer. Lake Effect contributor Dave Lurson is the arts and entertainment editor at the Shepherd Express Weekly, and he joins Dan Harmon now to talk about two of those films, beginning with Woody Allen's newest, Blue Jasmine. Allen is normally associated with New York City, but for the past few films, his locales have been in Europe. In Blue Jasmine, he's back in this country, but on the opposite coast, in San Francisco. Lurson says that staying out of New York has allowed Allen to get out of a rut.
Well, I think it's been a very good artistic and career move for him, getting out of Manhattan and Brooklyn and the whole metro area out there. His filmmaking was getting a bit stale at one point by the late 90s, by the end of the last century. And he really did need to see some different places and breathe some different air and look at some different scenery. And I think he's had a remarkable resurgence during the past decade.
Something that I liked about this movie, and I can only partially say it's true of his other movies, was that the characters seemed more either real or they seemed like people we would know, the ones in San Francisco who are having financial problems and relationship problems. I don't recall a lot of his efforts. I don't recall the characters being so either relatable or real.
Well, for a long time, many of his characteristic movies took place in the milieu of the Alec Baldwin character, the wealthy people of Manhattan, or at least the upper reaches of the intelligentsia of Manhattan. And when a blue-collar character would appear in a Woody Allen movie, they tended to be some minor supporting characters, the butt of some of the humor. This time, he seems to have a real sympathy for, you know, what they want to call the 99% of the population, or certainly the lower middle class. They have an uncouth vitality in this movie, which contrasts very well with the polished venom of Alec Baldwin and Cate Blanchett, right, and their circle.
Uncouth but likable.
Uncouth but likable, yeah. I mean, they have their problems. The movie does not in some way idealize the lower classes of the lower middle class of America, making them, you know, paragons. They are people with troubles and problems and personality disorders, but they seem to be really in touch with who they are and what they're doing for the most part. They certainly are far better grounded in reality than Cate Blanchett, the wife, I guess, former wife of a man who ruined the lives of many people through his financial chicanery. And she was evidently aware of much of this, but turned a blind eye to it, much preferring to think about the jewels and furs and expensive accoutrements of her life.
At the same time, I think that he was embracing, you know, the working class, if you will. And of course, he often does lampoon rich people or privileged people, and he was doing the same thing here. But it took on an added note of it just seemed much more severe. It seemed rich people in crisis even. I don't recall him really being that strong-handed with it.
Well, this is definitely a post-Bernie Madoff movie. The plot line relating to the failed, greedy financier played by Alec Baldwin is, you could say, ripped from recent headlines. I mean, it was definitely inspired by some of the shenanigans at the highest levels of Wall Street that helped ruin the world economy for a long time, or damage the world economy. So, yeah, there is a harder edge, I think, in Woody Allen's attitudes toward these people. They aren't just the lovable rich at this point, but they are socially irresponsible people.
And he's also showing one of them just falling to pieces. I mean, just really losing her mind.
Yeah, she is a person who reminds me a bit of the Blanche DuBois character from Streetcar Named Desire. Living in a world of affectation and delusion, no longer quite able to sustain the fantasy of who she wants to be. It's a remarkable performance by Cate Blanchett. I hope that come Oscar nomination time, that the appropriate committee for actresses feels so moved to nominate her.
I don't really recall also being I would describe her character as tragic. I don't recall many characters in Woody Allen movies being so just profoundly tragic. Someone who you sympathize with even knowing what they've done.
Well, you do feel very sorry for her, even though you do know that she was in part, at least, the architect of her own doom. Yeah, it's not that Woody Allen hasn't had serious movies in the past or more serious movies. You know, I think he will always be remembered primarily as a comedian, as a comic director, but he has been serious before. This, again, is a bit of a different movie. In this film, he seems to be pondering the significance of what certain elements of our society at the top end have done, their way of life, and the way that their way of life is very different from that of the majority of people. The acute divide of the class system in this country was very apparent in this movie. And it wasn't simply a matter of money, though money was part of it. There are all these cultural markers that distinguished Cate Blanchett from her stepsister, the lower middle class woman living in San Francisco in the Mission District, it looked like to me, who she fled to for refuge once her world in Manhattan fell apart.
Let's talk about the other movie that you really liked.
You're being ironic.
I am, of course, being ironic. Well, I think we might have to split the difference on this one because Girls, most likely, another movie that I didn't think was all that friendly to New Yorkers, twofer here today, but also could be considered a little fluffy.
Well, very fluffy. I mean, oddly enough, I don't know if you caught that. In the soundtrack, there was a song by some alternative rock band referencing Woody Allen, that my life is like a Woody Allen movie, not one of his better ones, not one of his worst.
Did not catch that.
There was a lyric about that in this film. This is definitely kind of like the not very talented grandchildren of Woody Allen type of movie, where it's sort of drawing from some of the neuroses, the intelligentsia, the upper class of Manhattan, the whole New York setting. Also contrasting that unfavorably with the more working-class milieu, in this case of Atlantic City, New Jersey. But, you know, it wasn't, I don't think, a very well-written movie. Most of the humor wasn't very humorous. It relied on being self-consciously quirky instead of being funny. And except for Annette Bening, I mean, some of the people in this movie really had no idea how to deliver comedy. Kristen Wiig, if I pronounce her name correctly, I've seen her around. She was in Saturday Night Live. I mean, she has some comedic gifts, but I think she was defeated by the screenplay. It just, to me, was not a very funny screenplay, and it's trying to be a comedy, so I guess I would call it a failure then.
Well, perhaps as a comedy. I mean, I looked at it more as a commentary rather than a comedy because I just thought that what it was saying about New York life was really kind of stinging.
Well, a lot of pretentiousness, a lot of self-aggrandizing, philanthropic activity. There was a bit of that in the Woody Allen movie also, too. So, yes, it is interesting that we're seeing, you know, two movies that do touch on very similar kinds of things in the way. I mean, I think that it's drawing from, an attitude of I don't want to say resentment toward the rich, but maybe we could call it that. I think a lot of people right now are a little bit less willing to fantasize about the rich, to admire them for their ability to rise, when it appears to be clear that many people who became wealthy in America rose by very bad means.
I think it showed they're not, if not wealthy, certainly the kind of the class of people who are where they are because they're vicious or petty, and you never know who your friends are. So, I mean, to me, when she returns to New Jersey, obviously that environment was sort of welcoming. But
well,
if nothing else, I mean, it certainly shows the contrast. It shows that most people are not from New York who live there, and there's this whole other world that is worth embracing as well, I guess.
Well, again, I think I said uncouth vitality of the lower middle class in connection with the Woody Allen movie. You could make the same statement about New Jersey folk in Girl, most likely. The 99% come off very well versus the 1% or the whatever you would call the people, the wealthier people in Girl, most likely. The kinds of people who attend Guggenheim Museum functions, I guess, and make a big show of donating money to causes of that kind.
All right. Well, aside from its comedic failures or its what I think is commentary, you don't think it stands alone as a kind of a breezy summer fun thing to watch?
it's a very muggy breeze at best.
All right. Well, there's one more movie, and I know you didn't have a chance to see it, that I just want to know if you have any opinions on it, which is Unfinished Song, a British slash English movie about, about a lot of things, community, music, dying, death. So, I mean, I saw it. I really liked it. I thought it was a really well-done movie. And the thing that I remark on is that it's a movie about people, which seems to be in short supply during the summer.
Controversial idea, movies about people in the summertime. That, well, everything we're talking about, good or mediocre, there are at least movies about people. I guess I'm finding certain kinds of movies coming out of Hollywood to be increasingly tiresome. Pacific Rim by Guillermo del Toro, a talented director at times, but he seems to think that there's a great fascination with watching giant reptiles and giant robotic devices battling each other over and over and over again. And the variance there is that the monster looks different, and it's a different monster, I guess, has fins instead of fangs or whatever. This stuff is not very interesting to see after a point. So, yeah, I if I have to choose, I'd prefer a mediocre movie about real people than a very expensive, high-gloss film about nothing.
And I'm glad you said it, because what I meant to say is not just about people, because, of course, there are people in every movie just about.
But not about Pacific Rim.
Okay.
Not very well developed anyway.
But movies about relatable / normal people.
Yes. Well, I think that people working outside of Hollywood or at the margins of Hollywood seem to have the lock on these kinds of movies nowadays. You know, Hollywood has become, you know, increasingly preoccupied with spending large amounts of money, drawing maximum numbers of people in on opening weekend. And when you have something like the Johnny Depp Lone Ranger movie, it took in $44 million on opening weekend, it's deemed a flop. $44 million is a lot of money, but then again, they spend an enormous amount of money making and promoting a movie that I have not seen it, but by many accounts, it doesn't have much of a human dimension to it whatsoever. It's kind of a caricatured, oddball sort of thing that does not put Johnny Depp in the best light.
Well, I think this might be a first, because here it is, middle of July, and we're talking about summer movies, which are not blockbusters. We're actually talking about movies that we may typically see in the fall.
Well, I mean, actually, Woody Allen's production cycle seems to be that he has a summer movie every year lately. I mean, as I recall, as I think back to the movies that he's put out lately, they all seem to take place during – I mean, I go to them during warm weather. I remember that. So he's definitely in the summer cycle. Every year there are movies that do provide an alternative to the blockbuster fare. And you have to be more aware of them. You have to look out for them. You tend to find them more at the Oriental and Downer theaters in Milwaukee than elsewhere during this time of year. But they're out there. They're overshadowed. They don't have the promotional budget. But if you want them, you can find them.
Okay, Dave, thanks for coming in. I'll talk to you in August.
Thank you.
Lake Effect contributor Dave Lurson is the arts and entertainment editor at the Shepherd Express Weekly, and he's the author of its I Hate Hollywood blog. He spoke with Dan Harmon about the new films Blue Jasmine and Girl Most Likely. And that is another week's worth of Lake Effects, produced by Mitch Tyke, Dan Harmon, and Stephanie Lecce, with Amy Kiley and our production assistants Eleanor Peterson, Gabby Magallanes, Nathan Royster, and Rachel Bloom. I'm Bonnie North. I hope you'll join us again tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend. And be with us again on Monday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect, all on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next. It's 11 o'clock.